From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. President Bush was in Pennsylvania today, a state seen as key to his reelection. The president again defended the war in Iraq, and he accused his Democratic opponent, John Kerry, of sending mixed signals on Iraq that could undermine the morale of U.S. troops. Senator Kerry has ratcheted up his attacks on the Bush administration's Iraq policy in recent days. In a speech at New York University, he criticized Mr. Bush for failures of judgment. And yesterday, he told my colleague, Robert Siegel, what he would do differently if elected president.
Senator Kerry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you very much.
I'd like to ask you several questions about Iraq policy. President Bush said that the Iraq plan you announced at NYU describes what his administration is doing. Can you say how your plan is actually different from what President Bush says he would do?
It's like night and day, because the president is not doing the things that I laid out. I precisely listed the numbers of troops that Iraqi forces are trained. They haven't contradicted that, contrary to what they told the public, 200,000 and then revised to 95,000, it's only 5,000. They're not training them rapidly enough. Over the course of the last year and a half, they haven't delivered services in Iraq. They haven't hired people. They haven't provided border security. They didn't guard the ammo dumps. And the weapons from those ammo dumps are now being used against our troops. I have again and again laid out that you've got to get reconstruction money, not just flowing to Halliburton, but you've got to get it going to other countries, and you have to get other people involved in this process. The United States of America can't do this alone, but the president is going down a trail that is more of the same, and it's getting worse.
But if you were to inherit his Iraq, that is, if you were to be elected in January, you would still be faced with the smaller number of Iraqis who've been trained.
Let me tell you, I laid out a plan that gave the president the exact roadmap that now, as a result of his bad choices, is the best opportunity for success. Again and again, when presented with choices over the course of the last 2 years, the president's made the wrong choices. He chose to disband the Iraqi army. He misled America, telling us that there would be a strong civil service infrastructure waiting. There was not. Mm-hmm. He said our troops would be received as liberators. They were not. When he had opportunities to bring the United Nations to the table, when Kofi Annan offered help, he rebuffed them. He turned away from it. The president has made the wrong choices. Now, if we're going to be successful, you have to have that election, and you've got to try to get the people on the ground to provide security for it. He hasn't done that. So he's not doing the same thing I recommended.
But is it fair to say, Senator, that your critique is not so much forward-looking as retrospective? You're saying what's happened so far is you say he should be faulted for what he's done and therefore not reelected.
My critique is about almost everything the president has done with respect to Iraq. From day one, he rushed to war without a plan to win the peace. He did not give the inspectors the opportunity to finish their work at the UN, which could have brought other countries to our side. He didn't go to war as a last resort, which is what he said. When the Congress voted, he said that war was not inevitable. He said they would do careful planning. He said they would go with allies. He did none of the above. He didn't do careful planning. He discarded the plans of the State Department themselves and didn't even follow them. This president has made the wrong choices each step of the way because he hitched his wagon to the ideologues in his administration and turned his back on the good advice of people like Senator Lugar, Joe Biden, Chuck Hagel, other people who said all of this was foreseeable. Now, I can't tell you what I will inherit on January 20th. I did tell the president what he ought to do today, and that's what's important.
In your speech at NYU on Monday, you faulted the president for saying that knowing everything he knows now, he would do everything in Iraq just as he did. What's the difference between what the president says and what you say, as you said in August, that knowing everything you know now, you still would have voted to give him the authority to do what he did in Iraq?
But that's different. Hmm. That is different. The authority is the authority to do the inspections. The authority is the authority to build an alliance. The authority was necessary because it was the only way to make inspections happen so that you could hold Saddam Hussein accountable. But giving the authority did not start the war. The president started the war. The president made the choice of when to go to war. We also gave him the authority not to go to war. Now, my plan is, it would have been very different. If I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction, if I knew that there was no imminent threat, if we knew that there was no connection to Al-Qaeda, all of which have now been proven true, there's no way I would do things the same way or go forward with a war. The president has said he would. Now, that is a choice in this election that is about as clear as night and day. The president says he'd go do the whole thing all over again. I clearly say, under no circumstances, without an imminent threat and the connection to Al-Qaeda and WMD, would I do so.
One point of your four-point plan for Iraq that has met with some skepticism is internationalizing to share the burden. So long as aid workers, contractors, even journalists are being kidnapped, if not beheaded in Iraq, what would convince any government that's currently not sharing the burden now to do so come January under a possible Kerry administration?
The president's choices have made this much more complicated and much more difficult. This president has so little credibility and so little ability to bring those countries to our side that you can't do it. I acknowledge it is a difficult task, but it is the only way ultimately to be successful. And it is important, I believe, to be successful because the war on terror, in terms of its larger ramifications, and not having a failed state in Iraq, it seems to me, is important to our country's security. Now, the president has made that complicated. I've urged him from day one to build that international coalition. There was a time when it was easy. There was a time when it could have been done as a normal course of business.
But aren't you saying that it would be easier for you to do in January if you're elected?
Yes.
Than it would be for President Bush? Why?
Well, it clearly is because this president has no credibility with those countries because he treated them badly, pushed them aside. His policy has been arrogant. He hasn't listened to them. And there's a lot of anger out there. The other thing is also that there are imagination and creativity could find something for those countries to do without putting themselves at risk. Let me give you an example. Put a bunch of Iraqis on a 747 and fly them to another country and train them there, and then bring them back. There's stuff that these countries could do that's low risk, but the president hasn't even had the creativity to do those kinds of things. They've acted as if this is not urgent. They've acted as if everything is going fine. And so, I tell you, it's frustrating. Because I'm sitting here, not the president, running for president, having to each step of the way adjust to the president's repercussions for his latest failure.
The columnist Robert Novak wrote this week about what he describes as the real choice facing the president in the coming months. What do you do if you ask the Joint Chiefs of Staff what they need to achieve their mission in Iraq, and they say, we need a lot more troops? Do you escalate the troop levels, or do you plan for a quick or a constant exit instead?
You have to support our troops, and you have to do what's necessary to try to make this mission successful. But they have not asked for that, and I have to wait until I'm president and sit down with them and see where we are.
But you yourself have pointed out that General Shinseki, the former Army Chief of Staff, said there should be hundreds of thousands of troops in Iraq. And as you say, he was fired for saying that. What if you get now the real story, as you would say, the Army speaking candidly?
I'll have to make a decision when I get there as to what the probabilities are. I can't hypothesize as to what I'm going to find on January 20th, whether I'm going to find a Lebanon or whether I'm going to find a country that's moving towards an election. That depends on what the president does now.
But I think
the leadership has been arrogant and disastrous.
But should either you or whoever is president next year consider the possibility of an increase in troops? Is that even a consideration, or should it be completely off the table?
I do not intend to increase troops. I intend to get the process in place that I described, and I believe, as a new president, with new credibility, with a fresh start, that I have the ability to be able to change the dynamics on the ground. Look, here's the choice for America. You can have more of the same arrogant, unilateral denial. You can have more of the same bad judgment,
Or you can elect somebody president who every step of the way foresaw these problems, warned about them, had a series of proposals about what to do about them, and who has the ability and skill in foreign policy to protect America. That's the choice in this race. I think it's pretty clear.
On Sunday, Senator Chuck Hagel, a Nebraska Republican, and like you, a Vietnam veteran, said this. He said, "The fact is, a crisp, sharp analysis of our policies is required. We didn't do that in Vietnam, and we saw 11 years of casualties mount to the point where we finally lost." That's the end of the quote. Do you think that comparisons with Vietnam are appropriate here?
They can become appropriate, yes. They can become appropriate. It isn't yet, but that depends on the decisions the president makes over the course of these next weeks.
But in the end,
I've given him a roadmap for precisely what he needs to do. If he doesn't do it, this is going to get worse before it gets better.
In the end, in Vietnam, it came down to, are we resigned to withdrawing, whatever the fate of the government in Saigon? When does it reach the point of saying, this was a misbegotten policy?
Look, you keep looking for the sort of, defeatist, negative end run here. I'm not. I'm looking for success. And as of this moment, there's a path to succeed. And where I am on January 20th, I'll make that assessment. And I assure the American people I will approach it with the wisdom and the judgment that I have learned by fighting in Vietnam, by opposing the war when I came back, by spending 20 years on the Foreign Relations Committee and leading on these issues through that period of time.
But don't you depend in that case on President Bush, as you say, following your roadmap, behaving much more wisely than you have described his actions so far?
I have no choice. He's the president of the United States. The election isn't until November 2nd, and the inauguration's not until January 20th. I have no choice. The American people have no choice. That's what this election is about. This election is about the quality of judgment and the future. Every time the president has had an opportunity to make a smart and wise choice with respect to Iraq, he's made a bad one. My path is clear. The president's is not.
Well, Senator Kerry, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you. Good to be with you. Thank you.
Senator John Kerry, speaking with us yesterday from Jacksonville, Florida. NPR has extended a similar invitation to President Bush to speak with us on this program.